I'd like to call to order the meeting. I'd like to give someone to make a motion to approve the minutes of October 19th. Take roll first.
You want to do roll call vote real quick?
One more?
Here.
I second this, Joe.
Here.
Carlos Carney?
Present.
Willis Rodiker? Justin Fong?
CS office. Michelle Aguirre for Frank Kim.
Sherry Friedenrich, treasurer, not here. Andrew Hamilton?
Not here.
Let's get a motion for the approval of the minutes.
I move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion, changes? Hearing none, call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye?
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. Under the election of the Public Finance Advisory Committee Chair for '24, that's this year, should that be '25?
It's for the remainder of 2024. This is the first meeting in 2024, so if we have the remaining three meetings this year, it would be the chairman, chairperson for that, for the last meeting.
Didn't we just switch?
We just did this.
Yeah. If you would like, you could, you know, make a motion to be chair again for 2024. It was because we had, the last meeting was the latest, was the last meeting in 2023.
How many meetings are covered under each, I guess, term, isn't it four?
Should be a calendar year.
For the calendar.
It's the calendar.
Yes, just for an advisement, with the passage of the new bylaws, if you remember from last year, or maybe it might have been the year before, it requires the election of the chair and the vice chair at the first meeting of the year. And this is the first meeting of the year, so that's the reason why the item's on the agenda.
Have a meeting, say, in September and/or December, as we normally would, then who we elect today would be the chair for those meetings, and then we would go through the process again in the January or March meeting.
You want the new one for '25?
Correct.
Yeah. I think we ought to just keep what we have.
From what I read in here, we have the latitude to do exactly that, so.
Make a motion.
If you would like to serve for the rest of 2024.
As long as Min will serve with me.
If Min doesn't get upset, then I will concede that it's a good idea.
Yeah, do the motion and I'll second.
So I will make the motion. Actually, my motion is for John Moore to serve as chair for the remainder of 2024.
And I'll second. Do we need a separate motion for the vice chair for the remainder of the year?
Why don't we do it? I'll make the motion that Min Chai be elected the vice chair for the remainder of 2024.
Second.
Any objections? Call for the vote. In favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? On the second motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So passed. Right?
That was easy.
Yeah. The calendar. There it is. Motion for approval.
I move to approve the calendar for 2025.
I'll second it. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Passes. Our next item is recommend to the Board of Supervisors the selection of financial professionals for the possible formation and financing one or more Rancho Mission Viejo community facility districts. In your package, you'll see that there have been evaluations of the various candidates for this. Do we need a motion before we can discuss this? I don't think so.
Usually folks make a motion to discuss and then.
Yeah, why don't we do that? And I'll make the motion to discuss this. Second? Open for discussion. It looks like the committee did a pretty good job if you look at the charts that were attached. Not an easy thing to do either. I've served on a committee before myself. It's a lot of work and a lot of effort involved. So I reviewed them all, and I don't have any reason not to agree with what their choices were. And anybody else here have the time to look at it or have any discussion on that?
Yeah, I'd like to raise a point of discussion, and that's on page 10 of the PDF if somebody wants to. Scroll forward for the one that's being projected. Okay, so on page 10, which is PFAC agenda item number 5, agenda staff report, page 3. Okay, on paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, it says, and I'll quote, "The contract terms and conditions with Stradling are not the county's standard terms and conditions. This contract contains modified indemnification provisions that vary from county standard indemnification language. Mm-hmm. The modified indemnification provision has been approved by county council as legally sufficient, and CEO risk management determined the risk to be acceptable for these services." So, you know, from the standpoint of oversight, I think it's incumbent upon us to just understand what the deviations are from standard practices.
Right. I think there's certain industry indemnification clauses that the bond councils are not comfortable with just because of the nature of their business. Maybe Nick or Lawrence can explain more, but we've had these same kind of exceptions year after year and contract after contract, so there's a very high comfort level with them. But I would, if Lawrence has a comment to this.
Lawrence Chan from Stradling. The main deviation is in indemnification. Our insurer doesn't usually allow us to indemnify, but what we've done is say if we are ultimately found to be at fault for what went wrong, then we will indemnify. So that's the basic deviation from, I think, the standard is you just will indemnify.
This is the same language as in previous agreements. That's what I thought.
What's the threshold for fault? I mean, is it gross negligence? Is it, you know, higher, lower? What's the...
Never had to cross that bridge. For malpractice, I think it would just depend on situation to situation. I'm not, and I could ask our sort of the experts in that field, you know, what typically is the standard. But I've never had to cross that bridge. So,
so to John's point, this isn't the first time we've had this. Okay, thank you very much. Answers my question.
All right. Any other questions, Mim? Do you have some?
No, I was just kind of curious about what the pool of candidates we choose from, because it seemed like there were only a couple to choose from. Like for instance, just the council, there's like we chose 3 out of 6, and then for the underwriters, there were 3 out of 7, and then the municipal advisor, there's 2 out of 5.
I know in the past we've sent out requests to bid on our contracts, and for those that answer, that's why the pool is. They don't all answer. They go. We have a standard list, and we send it out, and we don't get, you know, 25 replies back.
That I get, but it's just the people who are qualified in that pool to be part of that panel seems like it's a limited number.
So when we, the first step for our procurement of financing professionals is to issue a request for qualification. So at that point, anyone in the public can answer. And from there, we pull it down who can meet our minimum requirements, who can fit the needs of the county, and we prepare a qualified list that gets approved by PFAC and the board. Any RFPs for a financing can only then be sent to people on that qualified list. So not everyone on the list, not all firms specialize in all financing, so that's why a limited number will only respond to a certain financing.
I get that.
It's kind of a niche in a niche, I think.
Yeah. I get that. And then as far as the term of these contracts generally, what's the average term, I guess?
At least they do a 3-year.
3 years. Yeah, I recall 3 years.
So up to 5 years.
That's per our contract policy manual that is approved by our Board of Supervisors.
And then we go back again and start the process over.
That's why we're here today.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, that answers my questions. Thank you.
So the one question I have, Chairman, and with regards to the process, was there any representatives from this committee that served on that panel?
No.
No. If there was, and it's probably happened in the past, would that necessitate the participant to recuse from the voting?
Yeah.
Today, we'd be able to have a quorum.
Yeah, I've served on the committee and not been able to vote.
Okay, I was wondering how that worked. All right, thank you.
Any other questions? None, then we'll call for the vote. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? None, the motion passed. The next item of business is to recommend to the Board of Supervisors the selection of Wells Fargo, National Association, and the issuance of Series B notes to finance the Teeter Plan. Once again, work was done by a committee evaluating with Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, on the rates. Wells Fargo had far better financial rates for us, and I believe Wells Fargo is in the same league as Bank of America and J.P. Morgan, so it's not as though one is a less qualified person. I noticed that the spread of the start with was 59 basis points, which was the lowest of any of Bank of America or J.P. Morgan. A big benefit. Any discussion on let's put a motion forward first. Motion to discuss the Wells Fargo selection. All of them. Is there a second?
And I'll second.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Now let's have some discussion if there is any.
If I could ask a question about on page 19 of the PDF. Which is UPAC agenda item number 6 document, the agenda staff report. On the second page, the table shows how much each year the July Teeter delinquency purchase was,
yeah.
Which I understand to be that's what the cities and everybody else sold to us as delinquencies on the property tax. And we buy that at the financing and all that. So what I'm looking at is that the we're authorizing to basically sell notes up to $107 million, but we're way short of that. So do we really
self-fund? You have to remember the departments that don't take advantage of the Teeter program,
okay,
in the county, so they're not included in the total.
The authorization amount is actually up to $150, and if you look two columns over to the right, it says, actually one column over to the right, where it says note outstanding balance. So what happens is we make pay downs throughout the year. So there's like an outstanding amount so that at the end of July, we're actually bumping right up against $100 million. And so we thought of lowering the authorized amount, but just to be safe, our levy grows every year. Even if delinquencies stay the same percentage-wise, our levy is growing because there's more development, things like that in the area, and prices are going up. And so we don't want to constrain ourselves.
Okay.
In the past, Wells Fargo has been very gracious, and they've come up with ways where if we don't need that excess authorization, like towards the end of the 3 years, we can actually ask them to reduce it so that we're not being charged on that.
But is that the quarter percent charge on the right. excess on, that, on, like that
unutilized amount, exactly.
Pay that's not being taken, so to speak.
Right.
So okay.
The 150 minus, in this case, last year, 89 million, that 60 or so million is what you're paying that 25 basis point.
And that gets to what I was asking about is, do we really want to or need to pay a quarter point on that much of a headroom. But
yeah, we did a lot of analysis on that to be safe.
And rather than it, if
right,
and
right,
when you need it, they're going to say,
because when you need it, you need it overnight. So.
Get it. I get it. So going back to what you mentioned, Lewis, 1, 2, 3, column 4, the July 31st note outstanding balance, like in this schedule, the 23-24 is 89 million, mm-hmm, right? So that really represents like what, 2 or 3 years worth of outstanding notes?
Right, there's an overlap.
Right.
And then as soon as we issue in July, since interest rates are high, we've been making a very concerted effort to pay down as frequently as possible. And that's the other thing, the Wells Fargo note allows us to make multiple pay downs per year, which lowers our interest costs. And I want to point out the next table where it estimates the total cost estimate, that assumes no pay downs throughout the year. So that number, that cost is actually on the high side to be conservative and make sure, you know, that people know what the maximum cost could be.
Yeah. Okay.
But we make multiple pay downs per year. We're about to make one in the end of the month, before the end of the month, because we want to have as low principal outstanding as we can.
So is the table you're referring to, Lewis, is that at the bottom of page 3?
Yeah, it starts at the bottom. It starts at the bottom of page 2 and then ends up at the top of page 3.
Okay.
And the very bottom line of that table is kind of the three proposals side by side showing how much they could cost.
Okay. So going back to the question I asked before about you know, that it's basically like a laddering, that's actually what this represents. You just added up the numbers of what's outstanding from whichever loans are still outstanding. But would it be fair to say that, like, for instance, beyond 2 or 3 years, that whatever loans or notes that we were obligated to be on, they've been all paid off? So we wouldn't have a situation where we're still owing from notes that we sold 4 or 5 or whatever years ago, right?
Right.
Okay.
Third year could be. I don't know if you're staying on top of what the banks are reporting, but they're taking large charge-offs right now for non-performing loans. So the concept of people not paying their taxes is probably going to be up this year rather than down or even. So I think it's just good insurance and good stewardship to make sure that we have those funds.
That's my questions. Thank you.
Good. Anything else?
I have a question.
Yes.
So on page 3 of that presentation at the bottom, there's a smaller chart that shows somewhat of an anomaly there for 2021 and 22, where it shows a penalties and interest revenue of $12.6 million, and then we have only
$359, yeah.
Can you explain that, just for my own edification?
Interest rates were very, very, very low that year.
Yeah.
And also, too, the COVID would have affected perhaps the payment of property tax.
Right. It didn't affect us as much as we thought it would, but it did affect us. And so there's this lag effect, right? Because you have the delinquencies
right.
in 1 year, and then they get paid back throughout the next fiscal year. I think Suzanne did an analysis back in the day that something like 70 or 80% of the delinquencies do get cleared up that very next fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
It would actually probably be interesting to look back at that and see if that's still the case. But yeah, so that's there's kind of that lag effect. So yeah, you're getting very low interest rates mixed with probably high delinquencies the year before, and that's why because the revenues filter in the next year predominantly.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'd like to call for the vote to approve Wells Fargo. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. Lewis, are you taking care of the public finance status report?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the reminder.
Okay. Just sorry to interrupt, just to go and make sure. You're moving very efficiently, but I want to make sure the committee did have a motion to approve the financing professionals for the Rancho Mission Viejo CFDs, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the committee approved that unanimously. I'm just doing this for the record. I apologize.
Yeah. Should we have
Good
read
point.
It into the record each line item for the recommended action?
Are you in a position for you to state that you're approving the financial professionals as recommended in the agenda status report? We would only have to take notice if you had any exceptions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just very briefly for the status report, you may remember from the October 2023 meeting, this committee and the board subsequently approved the CFD 2023-1 financing. I believe in the staff report we had a not to exceed interest rate of 6%. We did get a little bit of lucky timing in the market. We went out on December 7th, and we ended up with 5.75% true interest cost and approximately $58.5 million in project proceeds for infrastructure in the community. So another successful transaction. The market worked, and more public infrastructure.
You can stay there at that rate.
Yeah, we didn't feel lucky at the time, but we're back.
So, Lewis, if I can ask, on that action that we took, there was a forecast, as I recall, from the developer saying that, in effect, they were anticipating interest rates by the end of this year would drop down to a fairly low level, and how that would affect the sell-through of the properties there. So my question is whether interest rates staying high as they have been, whether they're seeing a slowdown or not achieving their sales goals from what they had forecasted.
Yeah, so we were literally talking about that right before this meeting. They have seen, my understanding is they have not seen any slowdown. It's still very brisk because new home resale homes aren't really coming up on market, so that leaves a lot of folks purchasing new homes. Mm-hmm. And so it really hasn't slowed it down, even though interest rates have stayed high.
All right. Any public comments on what's going on today? Hearing none, we'll move on. Anybody on the committee have any comments they'd like to make? Calls for adjournment. This may be a record.
Wow.